Hi, this is Christian Kuhn of Urban Village Church in Chicago. Welcome back to my podcast. It is good to be with you again, sharing thoughts on certain things here at our church. And we are starting a brand new sermon series. And it aligns with my book, which I think I may have talked about before, but I'm very excited about its publication. You can pre-order it now, and I will have a link on the Podbean page about how you can do that. And supposedly, it will be printed June 1st. And so I think at that point, too, you can get it on all of the typical online places. So more about that in a second. First, let me read the scripture that we'll be focusing on today. It comes from Luke 17, and this is verses 11 through 19. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going to the region through the region between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." When he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to them, "Get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well." May God's blessing be on the hearing and living out of this word. So as I just mentioned, I have a book coming out, which is exciting and also feels like a relief because so much time has been put into writing it and putting it together. The name of the book and also the name of the short sermon series is called Failing Boldly, and it probably might help to talk a little bit about how the book and the sermon series came to be. I'll try to make this short, but a couple of years ago, I was approached along with Trey Hall, the co-founder, about possibly doing some writing for the United Methodist Church, ourselves and other church planters, to create some resources for other folks who were planting for the United Methodist Church. And so as I thought about it, I had a feeling that there was a certain kind of book that I did not want to write. There are lots and lots of books out there about church growth and how to revive your congregations. Lots of conferences and talks about that too. And I always, after reading those or hearing speakers, while they're good, I also felt like sometimes I walked away from those experiences feeling a little depressed because I felt like I was working really hard at my context and some things were going well, some things were not. And I would look at the authors of these books and the speakers at these conferences and I would think, how come it's so easy for them and not for me? So in thinking about writing a book, I felt like I did not want to do that. I didn't want to write a book that said, here are all the amazing things going on at Urban Village. Here's your here are your how-to steps about how to make it work. And then, boom, you will make your church grow. Instead, I was more interested in exploring vulnerability, exploring some of the ways in which we have failed in planting Urban Village. And so that was the impetus for the book, to explore failure and what it means to us in our personal lives and in our faith. And that is the title of the book, Failing Boldly, and also, as I said, for the impetus for the sermon series. So throughout the book, I also have little vignettes, little stories that other people wrote about sharing their own stories of failures. And one of the things I wanted to do was to help people understand that everybody fails. Sometimes when we fail, we feel like we are the only one. And there are lots of, in fact, one of the chapters of the book is about, or is looking at certain passages in the Bible that show people who failed in the scriptures. So one of the stories in the book, I just want to read to you. It's one of my favorites, written by a guy named Mike Bachman. Mike is a church planter and also the creator and person who oversees a coffee shop in the Dallas area. So it is a coffee shop slash ministry that, and those that many of those have started, not all of them have succeeded, but Mike's has. And so whenever Mike speaks, and Mike also wrote and edited a book that came out last year, people want to hear his success story. But what I wanted from Mike was a failure story, and he did not disappoint. And so he wrote this: at least 15 to 20 law students from nearby Southern Methodist University studied on a daily basis at Union, the coffee shop and new church start that I lead. A couple of them even came to worship with us on Tuesday nights. Our law school customers and worship attendees were loyal, but only made up a fraction of how many we could connect with. We launched a big event to raise awareness about Union on campus. We orchestrated a combination we were sure no law student can turn down. A panel of partners from nearby law firms, free Pabst Blue Ribbon, and free peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. We prepared for the multitude and multitudes and publicized like crazy PBR, PBJ, and partners. Who could resist? Apparently, the entire student body. The nearby homeless shelter got a lot of PB&J, and I was drinking PBR for months. Lesson learned, PBR pairs nicely with PB&J. You should try it. I love this story because, on the one hand, people look at Mike and what he has done and his successes. But on the other hand, the story reminds me, and hopefully reminds all of us, that even people who are seemingly successful fail. Everybody fails. That's the message that I want to convey not only to the readers of the book, but to the folks who will be hearing these sermons too. And so I was particularly interested in putting the book together in biblical stories and how failure might be perceived. And one of the passages that has given me the most comfort and strength is the one that I read today. Now, at first glance, it doesn't seem like a story about failure. In fact, it's often used in conjunction with Thanksgiving. The text never had much of an impact on me before becoming a church planter. In the last few years, though, it's become one of my go-to scripture passages when I feel like I've failed. So we see here that Jesus enters a village and 10 lepers approach him, begging to be healed. They must have shouted because they were far away from Jesus. Lepers were required to keep a certain distance from others because of their uncleanness. But their desire was clear. Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. Jesus starts them on the process toward healing. Off they go to the priests, and indeed they were made clean, a miracle. If there had been a local coffee shop in this village, one would hope that many of them would have sat down with Jesus to tell him how their lives had been changed. But only one did. And here's where the lesson in gratitude usually enters a preacher's sermon, because this one individual shows us the proper way to express thanks, and it's a good lesson. It makes all the sense in the world. But something different struck me when I read it after becoming a church planter. People were fickle, even with Jesus. That's my takeaway, anyway. In today's church world, which likes to measure many things, a 10% return rate on a particular ministry wouldn't be anything to brag about. In fact, I could imagine a supervisor of sorts sitting down with Jesus and saying, "Well, Jesus, you set everything up correctly. Well done on getting people in the door, listening to their felt needs, and addressing them. But what happened after that? Did you sign them up for small groups right away? I'm concerned about your stickiness factor." Jesus' comments after the one leper came back, probably bespeak the lesson in giving thanks and praise that he was trying to convey. Jesus says, "Were not 10 made clean? But the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" Part of me hopes, though, that a tiny part of Jesus was genuinely puzzled by the lack of people who returned. The other 9. Where were they? Well, I doubt Jesus probably lost a lot of sleep over this, but it's kind of comforting for me to imagine that he may have gotten frustrated at this quote-unquote failure. Certainly there are parts, one could argue many parts of this book, that I wrote because of my own struggles with failure, or rather, how to respond to failure. Because there are always key moments when we fail, not if, when we have a decision to make. In a sense, looking at this passage from Luke, we have a decision. We can either focus on the 9, or we can focus on the 1. That is, we can go down the path of asking the question, well, why didn't the other 9 return? Why did not the impact that I was seeking to make have a bigger influence on their lives? If we focus on the 9, if we focus on the supposed failures, then that can lead us to some pretty unhealthy places and can continue to ask ourselves some questions. Well, why didn't the 9 return? Is it something I did? What did I do wrong? Why did I fail? These are the internal voices that all of us have that if we let fester and take hold of us, begin to take us down paths that only lead us to more anxiety and stress and denigrate our own self-worth. And they are internal voices that continue to go on repeat after repeat after repeat. And then if that cycle happens, and it happens to all of us, believe me, friends, I've talked to numbers of people who struggle with this same thing, that they focus on the nine, that is, they focus on the things that did not go right, and they continue to ask those questions over and over and over again, then all kinds of different things happen, including one thing that I was reading about this week, something called imposter syndrome. This comes from a scholar and author named Amy Cuddy, who talks about imposter syndrome, and that is the general feeling that we don't belong, that we've fooled people into thinking that we're more competent and talented than we actually are. And when we give in to imposter syndrome, what happens is not only do we bring ourselves down, but then we simultaneously lift others up in ways probably that aren't healthy either. That we create this facade where we are just the worst, and we look at somebody else who seemingly is succeeding, and we think, well, they are the best, and we fail to see their own humanity and their own struggles too. That's the thing that can happen with imposter syndrome. I read this really great story that Amy lifts up in her book, and it was about the author named Neil Gaiman. You may have heard of him. He's a novelist, fairly popular novelist. And Gaiman tells this story where he was invited years ago to this gathering. He writes of great and good people, lots of artists and scientists, writers. And he said that he felt at that moment that people would realize that he didn't qualify to be there. As he looked out over all these people, these are people who have done really great things. People will soon find out that I do not deserve to be in the same room with them. So as he tells the story, on his second night there, he was standing at the back of the hall and music was playing. And he started talking to a very nice, polite, elderly gentleman who was standing next to him. And they were chatting about several things, including the fact that they shared the same first name. And then this other elderly gentleman looked out at all the people and he said this, "I just look at all these people and I think, what the heck am I doing here? They've made amazing things. I just went where I was sent." And then Neil Gaiman looked at him and he said, "Yes, but you were the first man on the moon. I think that counts for something." And then Neil Gaiman goes on to share, "And I felt a bit better, because if Neil Armstrong felt like an imposter, maybe everyone did. Maybe there weren't any grown-ups, only people who had worked hard and also got lucky and were slightly out of their depth. All of us doing the best job we could, which is all we can really hope for." This is the decision we make when we fail in our lives, to first acknowledge that everybody experiences this. And I'm not saying that when I talk about when you have a decision to make either on focusing on the nine or on the one, meaning we can focus on those who didn't show up or focus on the one who did. I'm not saying that we totally ignore things when we fail, that we don't learn from them, that we don't reflect on them, that we don't bring these things to our friends or bring this to God in prayer, all of these things. But I am saying what can happen when we let the negative thoughts or let these feelings fester and take hold and begin to define who we are. When we fail, we have that decision. Do we focus on the nine or do we focus on the one? Will we fully and completely give in to the internal voices? Will we give in to imposter syndrome? Or, as we say every week at Urban Village, will we follow Jesus' way? Will we focus on the one? What was important to Jesus was not building a false community for the sake of boosting his denominational statistic reports. What was important to Jesus was being true to his nature and calling. Note that Jesus named the fact that only one returned. And then he uses this as a teaching moment. He's transparent. He's authentic. He puts it out there. He doesn't hide it away. And the scripture doesn't tell us exactly who he's talking to when he's asking these questions, but I don't think he was just talking to the Samaritan who returned. I believe he was talking to those gathered around him, but also I believe he's talking to us too. He is open about all aspects of his life, and we should be too, so that others can see that unmet expectations do not end our own hopes. He looks at the one who returned. He sees this as a gift from God, and he focuses on him, seeing what can God do with this one. Because I think often when we try new things or we risk new things or we take some steps and we feel like we have completely followed on our faces, and as we reflect on what we can do better and all those things, we can also reflect on perhaps there is a nugget here that can be redeemed. Perhaps we can focus maybe what God has lifted up before me, and we focus and reflect on what is God doing in this one in our life too. You would think after writing a book about this and reflecting and reading many books and articles about it that I would still be able to respond to failure in positive, healthy ways. And yet, I still struggle with it. Just this past week, here in Chicago, there was a pretty major event that happened throughout places, throughout all of the city called On the Table. It was sponsored by the Chicago Community Trust, and what they wanted to do was create conversations in places throughout the city, people gathering together over coffee, over dinners, over informal settings, where they would just begin to talk about lots of different issues. And this is, I can't remember how many years they've done it in a row, but this is the second year that I've gone. And I got an email about 2 or 3 weeks ago from the Field Museum, kind of out of nowhere, asking me to participate in an On the Table event there. For those who know the Field Museum, one of the major, certainly major museums here in Chicago, if not the world, and it's only about 3/4 of a mile from where I live. But what often happens when something is so close to you, you tend to forget it. Or maybe you take people who visit you and you don't really pay much attention to it. So I notice it all the time. I go running by it along the lake often, but I can't remember, to be honest, when the last time was that I attended the Field Museum. But I thought, well, this is a pretty cool invitation, and so I'm going to go. And it said, gave the directions about how to get into the building. It said we're going to be meeting in Lecture Hall 2. And so I thought, well, this will be really cool. I'll be meeting, there'll probably make 50, 100, 150 people there who will be gathering together, and we would set up on these little tables, because surely people, lots of people, will be flocking to the Field Museum for one of these on-the-table gatherings. And so I got there right on time, 5:30, and I walked in, and there were 5 people there. And I thought, well, it's still early. And so I started having some chit-chatting with others who were gathered there. And as I was doing my best, I was like 75% listening to them and 25% looking out of the corner of my eyes, wondering who else is going to show up for this. And so I'm looking to see who else is going to show up for this. And I'm noticing there's a pretty impressive spread that they had. Lots of really great catered food there and some really great drinks. And so I was thinking to myself as I was trying to listen to the people in these conversations, and each minute that went by, I realized like, there are only 6 of us here. And in my conversations, I realized that 3 of them are from the field. So there were 3 people who showed up for this conversation. And so I had this mixed feeling of listening to these conversations, but also feeling like, boy, I feel bad for the people at the field. This is not going well. I mean, all of this food is here. They went through all of this trouble. And so I felt a little bit sorry for them. So we eventually sat down and had some really great conversations about the Field Museum wanted to have this open table to find out what kind of impact they're having on the neighborhood. And so it was an interesting mix of people, the 3 people from the field. And then there was a community relations officer from the Chicago Police Department who was there, who worked in the district where, in the South Loop, where I live and others too. And there was also a woman who was a business person representing the Chinatown Business Association, too. So some really interesting conversations. And so as we continued to talk and I learned more about the Field Museum, at one point I finally kind of said, you know, it's really too bad that this has not gone as well as I'm sure you would have liked. And I kind of laughed about that. And the people from the Field Museum looked a little bit puzzled at my reaction. And they said, this is great. We really appreciate having this conversation, including one person there who's pretty high up. He's a vice president for the field, and he genuinely looked puzzled at my comment. And he said, I think this is great. I really appreciate the chance to be able to talk in intimate terms with people who live and are affected by the neighborhood. And I looked at his eyes, and I realized this guy's serious. He does not see this as a failure at all, but instead sees this as a great opportunity to learn from others in a more intimate setting. And as I was thinking to myself, I thought, my God, will I ever learn? I was focusing on the nine, thinking, boy, I feel bad for these folks. It just has not gone well tonight. And he was focusing on the one. What is here in the midst of the setting, and what can be learned, and what can be gleaned from this conversation? Eventually, I hope that I might be able to learn not only from Jesus, but from others too. One of the things that certainly we want to convey in this sermon series is that we all fail, and there are things that we can lean on in those moments of failure. And we'll be talking next week about what is that main thing that we go to when we fail. But I also hope that we can learn from Jesus, who maybe had a little bit of disappointment that more people didn't come back and respond with gratitude for what he had done. But if he had any of that at all, he did not dwell on it too greatly. He instead looked at what was in front of him. He saw that this one person indeed had shown up. This one person who was probably perceived a failure by society because of his disease. And instead he came back to say thank you to Jesus. And Jesus was grateful for that one. And that's where he lived, in that space and in that moment. If we can acknowledge that we are all, in a sense, failures, in that we have all failed, then we can also begin to not dwell in those moments where we fall down and scrape our knees and don't quite do the things that we had hoped we would do, but instead to see that as an opportunity to see, is God still in the midst of this? Is there still something where I can see grace and opportunity to be Christ? And I pray that we would be able to perceive and know and see when those opportunities come before us. May it be so. Amen. Well, friends, thank you for listening once again. And I also have an important announcement that I'll make a couple more times. Many of you subscribe to my Podbean page, my own personal Podbean page. Some of you may also know and receive this through the Urban Village Podbean page. I'm going to be making a shift. I am launching a podcast where I'm going to be taking the book Failing Boldly and doing interviews with folks from all walks of life about their own failures and how they responded and how they got through it. And so that is going to take the place of my own personal Podbean page. So if you subscribe to my personal Podbean page, probably in about 2 or 3 weeks, I'm only going to be putting out those interviews that I have with people in the new Failing Boldly podcast. If you don't want to listen to that, I hope you do, but if you don't, you can still find my sermons and my own reflections on the text over at the Urban Village Podbean page, and I'll put a link in that too, so maybe you can start following the Urban Village Podbean page, and you can still get these there. So I'll try to make this known over the next couple weeks too, so just to keep you on the lookout. I hope that you listen to both, because I'm excited about the possibilities for this Failing Boldly podcast too. So until next week, friends, may the peace of Christ be with you.